Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Tuesday Night Jaw.
Hello, you lovely lot, and welcome to this week's edition of
Tuesday Night Jaw. I'm your host, Bozzers. How's it going? Welcome to Tuesday Night Jaw.
Hiya, Bab. How's it going? Welcome to Tuesday Night Jaw. How are you doing? The prodigal Bab returns. I am so sorry that I wasn't around last week. I really wanted to make sure that every single week you got a good podcast. And to be honest, I was right on the precipice of, you know, giving you something really, really good. And then I did the inevitable when you're an idiot, actually. I deleted a really important audio file that formed a really big chunk of what the podcast would be. And honestly, I just had a big cry and thought, I can't do this week. It's just too much. You know, when you've just got so much on and your mind is just all fucked up or busy or whatever. I think it's really important sometimes to just recognise your limits and also just be aware, like, you know, you guys come, you hang out, you listen to the podcast, you maybe do my wrestling quiz, we have a good time, you listen to my interviews. You're not going to be sitting there thinking, that's it, that fucking Bozzers has really let me down and I hate her guts now. Like, let's be realistic, it's a podcast about wrestling and it, you know, I've got to just take things as they really are instead of feeling like the world's biggest failure. So I hope you can, you know, forgive me that I wasn't around last week, but I'm back now and I'm bringing you that episode that I really wanted you to hear. It's two interviews this week, no Tuesday Night Jaw, Big Pop Master, sorry about that. Two interviews. One is with Lucy Cave from Progress Wrestling. Now, Lucy Cave took over a senior role at Progress following the speaking out movement, and she has been, I think this is probably fair to say, the driving force behind Progress's new approach to how they're going to be doing business, so all of the procedures and all that kind of stuff. So I thought I'd get Lucy on and chat to her about how those documents came to be. You know, how did she develop them when there's no one to look to for guidance? Where she found the inspiration and where she got support from? What Progress's plans are for the future and what they're doing now? You know, she's joined the team as a full-time member of staff and there's no live shows. And I just wanted to find out, you know, what she's up to. So that's the first interview that I've got for you today. That's coming up next, but please stick around because after that, I've got a chat with Kevin Blackwood. A little bit more about him after this, but long story short, he's a fucking badass that came back from serious injury and has just made his AEW debut. So stick around for that. I'll explain a little bit more after the interview with Luce, but let's get into it. Tuesday Night Jaw. Lucy Cave, welcome to Tuesday Night Jaw. How's it going?
Hey, how are you doing?
Good, thank you. How are you?
I'm good. I'm really good.
Wicked. How's things at Progress? How are things going?
Yeah, it's going really well. Like, obviously, with COVID, it's very quiet at the minute, but working on stuff, just making sure everything's going really well.
What stuff?
Can you give us any insight into
that? Yeah, we've released, like, our regulations and our processes and procedures and stuff. And now it's just sort of taking a deeper dive into it, making sure that everything we've put into our manifesto is actually being into place. So we're like vetting talent, staff, stuff like that. Even though no shows are running, it's best to get ahead of that now because there's obviously quite a lot of people to go through.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, it's a big roster now. So tell me about your involvement at Progress, because John Brierley sort of stepped away from the brand for a while. How's he doing, by the way? Have you spoken to him?
John is doing really well. He's resting up really well. Obviously, me and James were brought in to give John a hand during this train time. And yeah, like, his health is the most important thing for us right now. But yeah, he's doing really well.
Good, good. Now, it's just you and James, is that right? Because at first it was that there was, you know, a team of four on board to help with Progress, and then now I understand it's just you guys, is that right?
Yeah, so it's me and James at the moment. I'm sort of dealing, I've got like the head of communications role, so I'm dealing with like safeguarding, writing up all the processes and procedures, and James is dealing with sort of like a managerial role, so looking at like venues, like booking dates for the future, stuff like that.
Yeah, website and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
So you were brought on board for when the speaking out movement happened. That's right, isn't it? But your involvement with Progress precedes that, doesn't it? Some people might not know that. Tell me a little bit about that.
So like my sort of transition from being a fan to going like into a backstage role was doing social media. Actually on my Facebook memories, like last year, it was saying like I was doing the social media for the pre-show at Alexandra Palace.
Yeah.
And I think moving to now, this time last year, if someone would have said to me like, oh, you'll be in this position in Progress, I'll be like, yeah, you're lying, like that's not the case. But yeah, like my sort of role in social media, people knew what I was doing when I wasn't at wrestling. So like when I was working in museums and stuff, one of my key things was making sure working in the museum, it was accessible for everyone. And yeah, that's how I sort of everyone knows me for the roles I did in museums. And then obviously when this all came about, people knew I'd be perfect for that role because I've got experience.
Because you're also a carer, aren't you? So you like putting other people first is sort of like a thing for you.
Yeah, like literally it's as normal as waking up in the morning for me, like and it's something that I'm really, really passionate about, just making sure that whatever environment we're in, that it's accessible for everyone.
Like, I think it sort of took people aback really by Progress's, I mean, I won't talk about the initial reaction to speaking out because I know that a lot of work's been done since then. But I think it surprised people that you had like a relatively short bit of downtime, and then you came back with a really sizable body of documents in terms of, you know, even things like telling people what your code of conduct was for referees and stuff. I don't think people quite knew that you were going to come in swinging with all of that. And I think it surprised quite a lot of people, didn't it?
Yeah, like I think that was like just having those in place is going to shake up an industry that's never sort of had those in place before.
Yeah.
Like even just things like in the manifesto, one of the big things that kept popping up was we don't want to instigate feuds over social media, because at the end of the day, it's not our social media to be telling people what to post. Like that's the talent's own brand, and we want to essentially keep the story in the ring. And everyone was like, well, what does that mean? Like it was like a bit confusing for some people. Mm-hmm. But even something as simple as making sure that the talent have their own sort of their own brand and their own promotional site that's not being used by us,
yeah,
that was like a massive thing for people. don't get me wrong, like, obviously we came in guns blazing, but there was not much to sort of go by with, like, processes and procedures. Like, obviously it's quite known that wrestling is very unregulated. There's not much to look at sort of, like, example wise and like that, and I really had to start from the bottom up.
Now it seems like quite a big responsibility, because I think now, I don't know if you've experienced this as a promotion, but it seems to me like people are looking at what Progress are doing, and because you know you are such a big independent promotion in the UK, arguably the biggest, people are looking up to you like the leaders in this, and that must be quite a lot of pressure on you guys when you haven't got anyone else to set the bar, having to set a bar from scratch. That must be really difficult. How did you approach that? So where did you even start with building this resource?
I think one of the key things was for Progress was to make sure that the industry is safe before we even think of looking at our own promotion. And it's about setting sort of the what might seem to some in the industry as like a big ask, but some of the things that we have noted in our processes, procedures, like safeguarding procedures and stuff, is like basic law in the UK. Like, it's our responsibility as UK humans to, if we hear anything that's a bit concerning, or like if you're in your house and you hear your next door neighbours like screaming, you call someone to say, like, we think they're in distress. And that's sort of like the like a basic law here. And it was just about making sure that we can incorporate that into this very niche but wonderful industry that has had such systematic abuse, like, stemming in it. And yeah, like, with the sort of processes and procedures, it did have to start from the ground up. I know I've had many a calls with, like, Ancraft Trust, Sports England, just to make sure that the regulation there and the processes that we put out are the best that the industry can have.
I guess it's good that you're not, because you work for Progress now, but I've known you for quite a while now from different promotions around the UK. I think we met for the first time at a Progress show as fans. I think I might have been doing merch, actually. And then I've seen you quite a lot at my local promotions, you know, up here in the Midlands. And, you know, I don't see you as being like a Progress girl. I see you as being like just a wrestling person. Do you know what I mean? And I guess that's helpful when you're not so entrenched in all things Progress. I'm not saying that anybody that would be so entrenched with Progress wouldn't be able to do it, but I think that's probably why it's good that John got people in from an outside perspective to approach this, if you're going to be doing it with not just Progress in mind.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. Like, I've always said that I've got no loyalties anywhere. Like, I love wrestling. Like, I will watch some obscure promotion in, like, bumfuck nowhere. Like, if they're putting on good wrestling, then I will watch it. Mm-hmm. And I think that was such a key thing. And I think that's going to be a key for a lot of people as well, when they're putting people in positions in their company, to make sure that they just have an interest in the industry and not for a specific company or a specific talent or something like that.
You could just be too loyal, can't you? You know, you can't see the wood for the trees sometimes. And if there's something that we have learned from the way that wrestling has been, it's that it's something's not working. So we've got to check, something's got to be changed, right, from the inside.
Yeah, definitely.
Now, when you were building those documents, you said about speaking to Sport England even, the Ancraft Trust and stuff. Did you learn anything during that process that really caused you concern when you were like, hang on, this is a bigger problem than I even thought?
I think one of the biggest things was that this is not just specific to wrestling. Obviously, it is quite well known that wrestling isn't regulated. Like, there's no one, like, so there's no regulations at the wrestling schools or anything like that. And through Ironcraft Trust, I discovered the Martial Arts Code. And they were essentially developed because, like, combat sports like karate and stuff like that, they were in the same situation that wrestling was in, like, five years ago, where anyone could open up a school. There was no regulation. Anyone could be a teacher. And, yeah, that's sort of where it was just like, okay, like, as horrible as it sounds, like, it's not just us, but then it's such a bigger problem that it's not, like, when you're going through it, it feels like, oh, it's specific to the industry that you're in, but it's not. It's happening in gymnastics. It's happening, like, it's happening literally everywhere. Like, I saw the other day, like, there was, like, a Me Too movement going through, like, with, like, lawyers and stuff, like, in a specific company in the States. And it's just like, it's happening everywhere, and it's horrific to think. But the only way we're gonna stop it from happening again is just to make sure everyone's on the same page, and is protecting everyone out there.
It must be really challenging when it feels like a world problem and not just a UK problem and not just a wrestling problem, but an everywhere problem. I guess all we can do really is, like, our own little microcosms of societies and communities and stuff is just work on our people and hope that other communities do the same. Because if you think about it being like an everyone issue, you just wouldn't be able to sleep ever again, would you? You know what I mean? If you think about what that really means, that's almost too much to deal with. Yeah. So are you guys confident with the documents that you've put out there? Is it a work in progress? Are they working documents? Have you found so far since you've put them out into the world that there's been anything you've had to go back and change retrospectively? How are you feeling about those documents that you put out there?
The documents will always be a working document because obviously, like, laws always change, things that have been brought in from the government, like, we're always watching sort of, like, things that are happening in, like, legislation and stuff like that. So far, like, with the documents, there's nothing that's been really sort of, like, been a big issue, but obviously we've still got to run shows just to make sure they fit into place there. One of the really good things with everything that Progress has put forward, like the talent and the staff that we've spoken to, it's not been a big ask for people. Like, they've seen it and been like, we fully appreciate what you're doing. Like, obviously it's a big task, but the fact that you're taking it on is just incredible. We support you. And everyone's been on it and everyone's been super helpful. And obviously they realise as well that this is quite new. So there's going to be, like, I send out the wrong document to someone. Like, if someone's a talent, I accidentally send them, like, the referee code of conduct, like, something like that. Everyone's been, like, super, super amazing.
Yeah. Because honestly, when you first put those documents out there into the world, before I'd even had chance to read them, I was just looking through social media about what the reaction would be, because we're in a bit of a situation, and rightly so, where the industry has to be really heavily criticised. And I think that people are picking up on every tiny, you know, nitpicking on every tiny bit of detail. And honestly, I'm about that, because that's what it needs, constant scrutiny and in-depth scrutiny and stuff. So I was like, amazed to see how people reacted to it, because it seemed like people were like, okay, I didn't think you were going to be able to provide anything, but actually you've turned it out. But I guess there's a big piece of work involved in putting that into practice now, isn't there? Rather than just words.
I think, like you said, like, the criticism of the industry is completely understandable. Like, anyone that has, like, the critiques, it's all for the right reason, and these critiques are going to come in now at such a pivotal time when we need them to develop even further and to make sure the industry is even safer for everyone. The reaction was incredible. Obviously, like, I'd spent like 6 days a week 10 to 12 hour days just researching and stuff like that to make sure this was up to the best standard. And the reaction that we got, like, obviously it's still like we've still got put on shows yet, so once that happens and we know that it's working, but so far so good. And I just really hope that the documents did put a little bit of faith back into people. Obviously there's still going to be a bit of hesitation, but I just want people to know that there are people behind the scenes that really want to see this safe again and really want to make sure that it works.
Have you guys had to sort of, I don't know how it's working in terms of, is it going to be that the safeguarding stuff is about when you start shows up again, or have you had to work retrospectively on things? So have people come to you with things that happened before you were involved with Progress that you're now having to investigate?
Yeah, like, obviously, to have such a systematic set of circumstances in the industry, like, there's obviously going to be situations that we have to look at, we have to investigate. Whatever's happened in the past, like, some companies, I know they'll probably be like, oh, it's happened in the past. But we don't care. Like, if something has happened, we need to know, and we want to be there to help the people, like, to direct them in the sort of right ways, to make sure that they're going to the right people, to the right charities that can help them. Because one of the key things I've noticed, that a lot of people will come forward and they'll say, it's probably nothing, but, and it's kind of like, you say it's nothing, but if it's affecting you, then it's something. Yeah. And we want to know that, and we want to know if there's anything that we can do to help. Like, a lot of people that have come forward have just even said, like, we just want to let you know that this has happened, because they know that we want to make sure it's safer for everyone and that we can learn from their experiences. It's some of the cases have been horrific. There's been some tearful nights with some of the stuff that, like, I've received and had to investigate, but at the same time, it's nothing compared to what people have gone through.
And talking about people sharing what they've gone through, I had Alex Davis Jones from the All Party Parliamentary Group on the podcast the week before last. And they announced then that they were going to be putting together this, inquiry. Well done. You're the journalist, not me. Putting together an inquiry into British wrestling. What do you think about it?
I think it's, like, literally, it's what's needed. Like, if we can get everyone's stories, like, past and present, about what people have gone through, and they can sort of have a base of where we can go going forward, that would be, like, perfect. I think one of the key things for us at Progress, like, we've said this on our manifesto, that we welcome an independent body. Obviously, I know, like, the APPG have said they're just inquiring stuff at the moment, but if that's what their findings come up with, then we'll obviously welcome it with open arms. I think it's definitely what's needed, and the inquiry will be such a sort of what the industry will need going forward, just so we know what to look at.
Is Progress going to be giving evidence in that inquiry?
Yeah, definitely. Just as, like, I think as individuals as well as a company, of everything that we've sort of gone through over the last couple months, we're definitely going to be putting stuff in.
Good to know. And how do you feel about the industry at large, about about what they've done? I say they, it's just a big imaginary they, isn't it? About what the industry has done since speaking out, as in outside of Progress. Do you feel like the work's been done elsewhere? Are you happy with how that's all coming along?
I think it's still, like, I know, like we're sort of months out of speaking out, but it's still early days for a lot of people. There's been a lot, we've been in touch with a lot of companies. Like when we did our manifesto, like one of the key things that we wanted to do was give our dates out to people. And a lot of people were like, right, what's the catch? And it's just kind of like, no, we don't want to clash, especially with like smaller promotions and stuff. We don't want people to be missing out on two shows and stuff like that. And just opening up that line of conversation, you start speaking to companies that were where I was like at the beginning of speaking out, where it's just like, I don't know where to start. There's nowhere to turn or anything like that.
Yeah.
And just knowing my experiences that I can pass on to people and help them get in the right direction to make sure that their safeguarding is up to standard as well.
Mm.
That's been the key thing. I think obviously there's a lot of companies that have released their like safeguarding policies and stuff like that, and it's been brilliant. But it's like I said, it's once shows are running again, they've got to put them plans into place to make sure everyone is safe.
Have you guys been open to other people using those codes of conduct? So have you, you know, I know that you said you'd share dates and stuff, but are you happy for them to just go, well, if you want to just look at ours and rip that off, then do? Like, how are you, how open are you to that? Or how, like, well, we've got copyright over this, so don't copy us.
No, like, definitely not. Like, because we were working with, like, Ancraft Trust were incredible, like, while I was developing these policies. And so we're just essentially paying it forward. Like, if there's people that approach us and they're like, we need, like, can we adapt your policies? It's like, yeah, 100%. Like, anything to make sure that this industry is safe. Like, we know, like, that is the best that the industry can offer. So if people are willing to adapt that, then that's absolutely fine. I think people, there is that fear of maybe they're just going to copy and paste. But that's not happened.
Good. Because it's not always going to be relevant for everyone. Everyone's got a unique set of circumstances. Not. I think that's like quite the difficult thing about wrestling. It's hard to explain to anyone, because you could say wrestling to someone and they're like, oh, Big Daddy. Or you could say it to someone and they're like, oh, Hulk Hogan stuff. And it's like, yeah. Well, actually, it's a lot more nuanced than that. There's a lot more to it. Each individual promotion has got offers different things. Some are for families and for little kids, and some are for like adults only, and some are death matches, and like, you know, it's really diverse.
Like one of the sort of big things that I've noticed, like speaking to other promotions, like with the COVID stuff at the moment, obviously everyone's in different venues, so like one promotion might be like Resurgence, for example. They are in the Arts Centre, and obviously Progress are at the Electric Ballroom, so we're a music venue and they're an arts venue, so it's like it's two different playing fields. And yeah, I think a lot of people don't realise that there's just so many different like avenues for that one key thing of wrestling.
Yeah, which even in itself makes it a whole new challenge with trying to like make sure that it's running as it should be, because it's just odd. It's again, it's not just is it sport, is it art, but then within that it starts branching off into different places. So tell me about the future for Progress then. I want a scoop. When are you hoping to be back on live shows? Do you think fans might be able to be there? What, come on, tell me something that went.
So we're hoping for an end of December return. We sent out an email to like the Club Progress members just to know our plans, and that is our aim. Hopefully that can go forward depending on the government. But yeah, that's our aim. So.
Okay, so that'll be the unboxing show.
Hopefully. That is the plan.
Okay, you get a free mask, and you get a free mask, and you get a free mask. Merry Christmas! Okay, wicked, that's really good to know. So if people want to get hold of you, from the perspective of if there's someone listening that's had a shitty experience at Progress and wants to make their voice heard, where can they find you?
So obviously I'm on like social medias and stuff, but if there's anything like that you want to report or anything like that, just email me. My email's lucy@progresswrestling.com. Like I said, I am working full-time now, so I am available to chat, even if it's just to like people just want to air something that's been on their mind for a little while. Just there for support and to bring people into sort of other avenues that will help them out there. Yeah.
And if people want to just say hi and they haven't got anything to report but they just want to follow what's been going on, how can they get hold of you on socials? What's your tags?
So if you want to catch up on progress stuff, Twitter and Instagram is this_is_progress. I'm on all social medias as Luce from socials. Come say hello. And that's all the platforms.
And James is just an international man of mystery. He's not a big social media guy, is he?
He's definitely not. Like, he always says, like, anything to do with social media, he's like, please, Lucy, deal with it. He said to me the other day, he was like, the only reason I go on social media is if there's a football shirt competition. Like, and then he can enter it. That's the only time he uses social media.
So it'll be you on the Progress socials if people want to get in touch.
Yeah, just come say hello. There's obviously not much going on at the minute, but we're trying to still keep active. Just make sure that we are still here. We want to keep people safe, and we hope that they'll join us on that journey.
Wicked, Luce. Thanks so much for joining me. Appreciate you taking the time out.
Yeah, thanks so much for speaking to me, especially on such a hard subject.
No, I appreciate your time. Thanks so much. Cheers, Luce.
Thank you.
Bye.
Tuesday
night, Jaw. Thank you so much to Lucy Cave for joining me on Tuesday Night Jaw. I've got so much respect for Luce. Not in the context of her being a manager or whatever, at Progress, being in this pretty senior role there. That's obviously wicked, but from a personal perspective, as someone that's seen her repeatedly at British wrestling shows across the UK, I've always been met by friendly, welcoming, inclusive, and just a beautiful heart, really. So I'm really glad to see that she is doing stuff with Progress and she's leading the way there in terms of making the brand more secure and a good place for fans. I just can't imagine anyone better for the role. So big up Luce, really glad that she could be on the podcast. Now, in the spirit of journeys and creating something good from something bad, I've asked Kevin Blackwood onto today's podcast. Now, a lot of you guys may not have heard of him because he hasn't been particularly prominent on the British wrestling scene. If you've seen any Smash Wrestling over in Canada, or if you've seen any of their stuff, I don't know if Progress might have some Smash Wrestling stuff on their network, right? Let me know. But yeah, so Kevin Blackwood is one of the Buffalo Brothers. He wrestled predominantly in the East Coast of America, so he's from New York. The Buffalo Brothers were driving home from a show one night and got into an awful car crash. I mean, there's no other way of saying it. It was a potentially life-changing, life-altering, almost life-ending accident. And he has brought himself back from this, what must have been, awful place where he suffered really serious injury and couldn't have stepped in a ring ever again, to now making his AEW Dark debut. So we're going to be chatting about that. Welcome to the podcast, Kevin Blackwood. Tuesday Night Jaw.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Jaw. Okay, Kevin Blackwood, welcome to Tuesday Night Jaw. How are you doing?
I'm good. Thank you for having me.
No problem. Thanks for joining me. Congratulations on making your AEW debut. How's that been?
Thank you so much. It was a really good time. We ended up doing two tag team matches, me and one of my partners, Daniel Garcia, and it was a very positive experience. Very, very positive environment.
Good. So I want to get more into all of that stuff a little bit later, but for now, I want to ask when your love of wrestling began. So how long has wrestling been part of your life and how did that come to be?
So I don't remember exactly when I got into it. It's one of those things that, like, as far back as I can remember, I've loved it. My dad got me into it at a very young age. He's like a lifelong wrestling fan as well. So, literally as far back as I know in my life, I've been watching wrestling.
Awesome. And was it sort of WWE stuff that got you into it?
Yeah, WWF and WCW, both. Yeah. I was big in watching the Monday Night Wars when they were happening.
Excellent. And at what point did you think, I could do this?
Not until many, many years later, to be honest. So okay. I'm 29 now. I didn't even consider it as an option until I was 24, about okay. Like 5 years ago.
Why? Out of curiosity.
So the thing with me is I didn't know about independent wrestling until much later on. So I didn't know about guys like Bryan Danielson and like Davey Richards, like ROH guys and dudes that were making it big that were like my height and my frame and stuff like that. I thought you had to be like this massive jacked up wrestler to be a wrestler. So I just didn't even think it was like an option.
And then did you just happen upon some independent stuff? How did that come into your life? Because it's sort of a completely different thing. It's hard to explain to a non-wrestling fan, but it's different, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm being bombarded by dogs right now. One second.
I love that.
You wouldn't if you knew them. Yeah, I don't know. So, I'm sorry. Could you repeat the question?
That's okay, yeah. I was just wondering at what point independent wrestling came into your life, and because that's so different from the stuff that we would normally see on TV. At what point did you see those guys?
To be honest, I didn't watching much of it until I found training, until I, like, decided to like try and become a professional wrestler because it's one of those things, like, you know, you get into like a music scene through like a more mainstream type of band, and then like all your friends have already been into it for a long time and they know all these like seedy independent bands that like no one's ever heard of, and you want to be cool like them, so you start like trying to listen to those bands. I did the same thing. Like, all I knew was watching like WWE pay-per-views and like NXT. And so I was like, oh God, I got to start watching like New Japan and Ring of Honor and like all these independent promotions. Like that's what happened for me, to be honest.
Yeah, that must have been really overwhelming because there's a lot to choose from and a lot of different kinds of wrestling, right?
Yeah, there's so much. One of the big ones that I got into when I started training was Lucha Underground, because that was so different. And I was just like, it was like the style, the wrestling style itself was different, but also obviously the like filming and everything, like the style of the show was like, I was very blown away by like the theatrics of it. It was very different, very cool.
Yeah, it's super cinematic, isn't it? So you're sort of like half a wrestler and half an actor. It's sort of like that crossover.
Yeah, and I feel like they really did that right. Like it was just like the stories really translated well into the wrestling.
And so tell me where you were in your career. So actually, I should probably rewind a little bit. Tell me about your training. Where did you train and what were your aspirations at that point?
I started training in, it was actually almost exactly 5 years ago, 2015, it was at the time like a brand new wrestling school in Buffalo called Grapplers Anonymous. I think at the time, I'm gonna change location here. I didn't have major aspirations at first, I don't think. I think I was just kind of dead set on just wrestling in general. I thought like maybe I would wrestle some like local promotions and just like kinda near my home. And then I don't remember what happened. Something happened where I was like, you know what, I'm going to make a living doing this. And I'm going to make like a very comfortable living doing this. And I ever since then, I've just kind of just really been pushing and chasing that. So,
and how did that go? Cause I think it was it 4 years then from when you started training to when you had, and we'll talk about this in a bit, a very, very serious life-altering accident. What were those 4 years like? Where were you wrestling? What were your main promotions?
So, my very first match, the anniversary of it is coming up in a couple days, actually. I always remember it. The funny thing, I never remember how many days are in September. I just know that it's the last day of September is the anniversary. So,
Laura.
Okay. Yeah. Then that's it. So what happened? It was for the big local promotion in Buffalo is Empire State Wrestling. And at the time our school was pretty closely linked to the promotion. So my trainer got me my first match it was kind of like a fair show. It was like under a tent in a town in the middle of nowhere. It was raining. I came out to Gangrel's theme music as a rib. And then I didn't really wrestle again until like a couple months later. And then I didn't wrestle again after that until a couple months later. It was very sporadic.
Mm. Was that by choice? Out of curiosity, was that by choice?
It just, I didn't know how to go about getting bookings. The only place I knew of that I could get bookings was this hometown promotion. But then I started going to Smash Wrestling in Toronto, who's worked with Progress a lot. I started riding with Andy Williams, and eventually I started getting booked there. And a major part of how I progressed pretty quickly was the quality of wrestling at Smash was so, like, the work rate was insane. Like, the quality of it was just so high. And I, like, literally to hang with the guys that were wrestling there, I had to get good fast. I don't know, it just had such a major effect. Just like working with the such like intelligent wrestling minds, such talented individuals, like it really rubbed off on me a lot. And so through 2017 and 2018, I did a lot of work with them. And then because of that, I was able to start expanding I worked in the Midwest a little bit, mostly a lot more promotions in Canada started booking me because of my work in Smash. And then a lot of the American Northeast, I started expanding towards to like Maine, New Hampshire, or the New England area. But yeah, so I've done a lot of driving with a group that the guys that were involved in the accident you mentioned. Like we became like a very like tight-knit core group out of Buffalo.
So where were you driving from on the night of that accident? You don't mind me talking to you about that, do you?
No, it's fine.
Okay.
We were coming home from Montreal. We had a show there that night. It kind of was like doomed from the start, like the way things played out. Like, we were going up in Puff's van and then that died. So like I live a little bit outside of Buffalo right now. So the way we usually do it, if we're driving a certain way, is I will meet up with them. Like they'll get on the highway and I meet up with them like on the way there. And then I hop in whatever vehicle we're taking. So they were on their way to me and their van died. So they had to like get towed back to Buffalo. And then, I had to drive out there, meet up with them, get in a different van, head out that way. And we were going to be like super, super late. So we literally hit up the promoter and asked if we could like change all of our matches, because we were in four separate matches and we were like, could we just change everything we're all doing and we'll just have a fatal four way just so we could put the whole match together on the way there, which is what we did.
How long's the drive?
It's about 6 hours.
Okay. So you'd had your fatal four way match. It was as though the universe wasn't interested in you getting there at all, which is very bizarre. But you got there, you had your fatal four-way match, and you headed back. What happened then?
So, Daniel Garcia and I were asleep in the back seat. I think Puff was, like zonked out in the front passenger. And then Kevin Bennett is the one who was driving. So we're like an hour outside of Buffalo at this point. I think it's like 6 a.m. And the car hits black ice, spins out. We slide into like perpendicular with the end of a guardrail. So the guardrail pierces through the back seat where Daniel and I are sleeping. I stayed asleep during this whole portion of the ordeal. So when we collided with the guardrail, I was asleep with my head against the window. So my head smashed through the window, which concussed me very badly because I don't remember literally any of this experience. I tell this story based on what I was told.
Yeah.
So Daniel is either thrown from the vehicle or he crawled out of it. He's not entirely sure, but he ended up breaking his femur in the process. And then I think his left ankle broke. I broke my right ankle, my left tibia, I think it was. And, I had a crack in my skull from breaking through the window. So Puff ended up, I don't know how he did it, 'cause he's a large man, but he like forced himself, because his door was jammed shut. He forced himself through the window to try and get out, to try and like see if we were like okay. He ended up calling an ambulance and his mom, and like I think he called Daniel's mom, I know he called my mom. And yeah, I guess we spent a good amount of time. He says that I was making some crazy like horrible sounds because I was just like I was in horrific pain. I'm very glad I don't remember it.
Yeah, you must have been in such shock, all of you. What a horrible, horrible experience. And what was the process of rehabilitation for you like?
So I spent a good amount of time bedridden. I think I was like about a month. All I could do was lay in bed because they were so worried about like the crack in my skull. It was like right at the base of it. So I guess like there was like if the damage had been any lower, I could have been paralyzed basically. So like, I had like my neck was stiff, my legs are both broken. Literally to move around the house, if at all, to go to the bathroom and stuff, I was like moving up on my butt to get to the bath. Initially, I started looking in because I didn't do like official rehab like through a. Like a doctor or anything or a therapist. I was able to do stuff at home, but I looked up like exercises for like strengthening my legs, making sure my neck was okay, doing like neck raises and all this stuff. I started walking probably sooner than I should have. I think I was on crutches and slowly weaning off the crutches by, the accident was like very beginning of January. I think like mid to late February. I was like lightly walking.
Wow, that must have been really rough. Not obviously really rough on your body, but in your head, you know, it must have been so challenging to go from being so active and constantly traveling and doing stuff to then being stuck in bed. That must have been really rough on you.
Yeah, well, it sucked because I was like starting to get in like really good shape. Like I haven't always like looked like an athlete, and I was starting to feel like I was getting there. And then it like right, just like cut that short. Like you don't work out, you don't move around and travel anymore. You just sit on the couch and watch wrestling all day. It was like mentally draining to just like, it's January. I can't even go like sit outside. Literally all I can do is like, my day was the same every day. I wake up, I come downstairs, I sit on the couch, I watch whatever it is I'm watching that day. So, I mean, I love to watch wrestling. I got a lot of wrestling in, but it's very different when you're so used to a life of just like not being home at all to just like constantly being home.
And what was your frame of mind like? I imagine you were focused just on getting healthy, but what was your frame of mind like in terms of coming back to wrestling? Did you ever think this isn't going to happen, or did you always work towards that goal of that comeback?
No, I knew like one of the first conversations I remember having was telling Pepper Parks, he's the Blade in AEW. He's like one of our trainers. And one of the first things I remember saying to him was like how cool it was going to be for like the big return. Like I always planned that. I knew I was going to go back to wrestling eventually when I was able to. Very like almost immediately started like planning out like how I wanted to do that. So I thought about it, like there was never any doubt that I was coming back.
And when was that comeback match?
It ended up being July 12th of the same year. So it was about 6 months later. Prior to that, to set it up, because I had been in a feud at Limitless Wrestling in Maine with a New England guy, Christian Casanova. He's like one of the most talented dudes that I've ever met. He's like very slick. He's very good looking. He's very good at wrestling. He literally should be a millionaire right now. But I knew that I knew I wanted my first match back to be at Limitless against him. So I did like a whole cool like surprise return in like March or April, where I wasn't wrestling yet, but it was just to like set up the big first match back. And yeah, that turned out really cool.
What was that like?
Oh god, I had hit up a dude from a band called Bloodbather about like writing me new entrance music. So I had that all ready to go. So it was he was a heel and he was like about to cheat while the ref was down. So, and as he's about to do it, my new music starts playing and nobody knows who it is or what's about to happen. And I came out and I just watched like the whole crowd like slowly stand up. And I was so in the moment. It was like one of the most dramatic experiences, like in a good way, that I've ever had.
Yeah.
And then, so like, going forward to the match, our match was first on the card that night. And like, I'm standing there like at the curtain, like I'm getting all like hyped up. Like Pepper's like patting me on the back, like, you got this. And I'm just like ready to go. And like the crowd starts chanting, "Black Wood, Black Wood." And I was like, this is so sick.
I would have cried.
Yeah. No, literally, like I said, like the show was in Maine. Literally drove to Maine because they like needed to be there that night, and like my girlfriend lives in Los Angeles. She flew out to like drive from Buffalo to Maine with me. It was like such a cool night.
Very lovely. And then I guess at what point Hugh and Daniel Garcia made it to AEW? I imagine that was through, you know, knowing the Butcher and the Blade, and it was cool because I think you did your debut against them, those guys.
Yes, and we didn't know what we would be doing. It's kind of like if you get the opportunity to do like extra work for a company like that, you don't know if you'll even be wrestling. So we got there, and like they didn't have the card written out yet for Dark. And we're like, oh, well, I guess we'll just wait and see. And then we're talking to somebody, and like somebody else comes over and they're like, did you guys see the card? And we're like, no. And it's like, it's you two against Butcher and the Blade. And I'm like, oh my, like, this is like the ideal match. Yeah. So like, it literally couldn't have been better. Like Pepper and Andy both say that it was like the most fun week that they had. One of the most fun matches that they've had so far, I guess. Just, I don't know. It's one of those things, like when you're wrestling your close friends like that, it's always a better experience.
Yeah, because I imagine you know each other inside out at this point.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. Like, obviously there's chemistry there, and like Daniel and I have like insane chemistry either as a tag team or as opponents. So like, getting to tag together, especially against Pepper and Andy, like, I wouldn't have wanted to do anything else, honestly.
Yeah, and your bond as a result of what you went through, that shared experience, as traumatic as it was, that must have really like bound you forever, right?
Yeah, absolutely. The four of us that were involved in the accident have been, I mean, we were already so close, but definitely, like, ever since then, it definitely got a lot stronger in that sense. And then, like, even like Pepper and Andy were with us like through every step of it. Like, Andy was in Japan at the time of the accident, and his like immediate response, him and his girlfriend, when they found out what happened, they like immediately started a GoFundMe that like caught like crazy traction, because like Andy knows. Through being in Every Time I Die, Andy knows like literally everybody.
Yeah.
Like, it's so crazy. Like everywhere we go, Andy like knows somebody. But like CM Punk like shared and donated to the GoFundMe, and like Chris Jericho donated to it. Like all these like big name wrestlers were like spreading it and donating, and that was like literally, like, CM Punk tweeting about it was, like, one of the coolest things that I've ever seen at the time. So I still mark out about that.
Because the wrestling community is, it's like, it's a bizarre place. I mean, me and you have got friends in common. That's how this whole hookup happened. It's like the, not hookup, that means a different thing in America, doesn't it? Sorry about that. I don't mean that. this whole connection. But the wrestling community seems quite small. And I guess when really serious things like this happen, that's when you get to see it at its best, right? When people really pull together.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, I've seen so many situations, like somebody getting injured on a show and stuff like that. Like, you never think, like, it's going to be you that people are, like, gathering, like, coming together for. But, like, when it is, it's so heartwarming. Like all day, like, the first day I was in the hospital, the first day I was in the hospital, I don't remember, but the second day I was in the hospital, all day I'm just like scrolling through like Facebook and Twitter and Instagram, and it's just all this like people sharing the link, people commenting on my stuff, like just being so supportive and kind, and like as much as the wrestling community can be very negative and toxic, I like when it counts, like everybody comes together, and like the things that matter are definitely focused on more than the negatives.
Yeah. And so what are your plans now for the future? I know that you probably can't say any future ideas with AEW or any bookings or whether they're going to happen or not, so I won't push you on that, but I imagine that when you go through a trauma like you have, that your outlook on life must change. What are your hopes and aspirations now for the future? And are you more driven than ever to achieve them?
Yeah, absolutely. So I recently, I gave kind of like notice to, for the past 10 years, I've been a tattoo artist as my day job. And I don't know, it's probably like a combination of like a bunch of things, along with just the drive to just be a wrestler, that I just like lost any like love and passion for tattooing. So I kind of gave my notice to my day job that I'll be leaving at the end of next month, that I feel like just really diving in the deep end like that, just putting like all your focus into one specific passion like that, is like, it kind of like forces you to just like really give it your all. And I'm like very excited about that. Like, so I, like, once that's out of the way, all my time is going to be free to pretty much to wrestling, and like all the things that come with being a wrestler, like you're kind of like your own like business in a sense. So like, I've got like my web store, putting up merch and prints and still like artwork, but definitely my aspirations are all in on wrestling right now. So any bookings that I can get, I know they're like limited with the COVID situation, but like really anything I can take in on independence. And obviously like if AEW wants me back, I will absolutely be there in a heartbeat, but definitely I'm going 100% on being a full-time wrestler.
Excellent, man. I'm rooting for you. Good luck.
I really appreciate it.
It's gonna be brilliant. You can't lose. If you're going with a positive mental attitude, you can't lose. You can't lose.
Exactly.
Excellent. Kevin, thanks for joining me on Tuesday Night Jaw. It means a lot to me for you to take time out.
I really appreciate you having me. It's a very good conversation.
No worries. Bye for now.
Goodbye.
Tuesday Night Jaw. Thank you so much, Kevin Blackwood, for taking the time out to chat to us on Tuesday Night Jaw. It's always a really difficult one, speaking to someone all around the world, the other side of the world. So if there, again, there were some glitches there in the, you know, the way that it was presented, then I'm really sorry about that. But he had to keep running away from his dogs, and that took him outside, and that meant that his internet signal was sketchy in parts. So I hope it came across well, as enjoyable for you to listen to as it was for me to conduct. So thanks again to Kevin, and good luck. I can't wait to see what's next for you, and I'm really hoping that it's more AEW stuff, because who doesn't want to see people doing cool shit at AEW? I certainly do. Now that's all I've got for you for this episode. I'm really sorry that we haven't had a big podcast out. I really wanted to do one, but you know how life can be sometimes. It's just, everything's just been really busy and really nuts. And it's hard to take time out to come up with 10 innovative questions, but I promise you, I will. Also, if you've got any questions, any fun big Potmaster style questions, let me know. You can always send me a text, 07882 005 803. That's +44 7882 005 803. Let me know some fun questions for Big Potmaster. The premise, if you don't know, is where we have a quiz related to big wrestling pops, so big crowd reactions. We've had loads from New Japan to, you know, WWE, obviously, past, present, future. No, that doesn't make sense. There's no future in it. Now then, forever. If you've got any fun ideas for questions or themes, maybe, for certain episodes of Big Potmaster, let me know. I'd love to hear from you. And I always would love to hear from you, so you can always send me a text. Let me know what you're watching at the moment, what you're enjoying. Let me know if you want me to cover something on Tuesday Night Draw that I'm not covering. Let me know if there's a promotion that you would like me to go behind the scenes at. I'll try and get hold of them, have a chat to them about what they're up to and what their plans are for the future. And yeah, I'll catch you next week, all being well. Bye.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And is all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.